8 on the shot clock for Phillips as we hit the final minute. Shaquem Phillips, the fifth-year senior. This is his time!
Welcome to another Charleston victory slash we've still got the rest of the season to play Perchcast. I am Brant Wilkerson New, joined as always by Uncle Bill Jones and a special guest from WWAY. We've got Jake Eichstadt.
Really appreciate you guys having me on. I think you guys do such a great job of not even just covering the team, but bolstering support for not even just the basketball team, but multiple teams at the university. I see you guys always sharing about every athletics page. You make my job a lot easier. People like you make my job a lot more fun. So really happy to be talking to you guys tonight about some Seahawk basketball.
Well, we appreciate that. That was part of the goal in getting this thing started, was trying to make up for some of what our, I guess, local media has kind of disappeared, which is disappointing, but that is the way of the world these days. But wanted to have you on this week because you were courtside in Trask Coliseum as a media member, which I guess there aren't many anymore. But what was kind of your perspective on Saturday night and that Charleston victory and being in an environment like that for the first time?
Yeah, I had the best seat in the house, and I always say it's, you know, I love covering the UNCW games too, because especially at the bigger markets, the games you go to, you're kind of confined to a certain space. You know, like at a, you know, you have like A12, you know, on the left side of the baseline, and you know, you can't really move. But I love really being able to move baseline to baseline, shoot from both sides, and kind of like chit chat with the people that I'm familiar with on the baseline about, you know, trying to keep up with the game story about what their impressions are, you know, trying to talk to Brett Blizzard, Tiffany Tucker. If people like that are on the sideline, I really love being able to get to do that at UNCW home games. Saturday was just such a special atmosphere. Obviously, you guys have been to so many UNCW games. I've been to a few just since I started here in 2021. Last year's Charleston game was awesome. This year's Charleston game topped it. I've been at some pretty cool college basketball moments. I'm from the West Coast. I've been to some Pac-12 championships. I was at the University of Maryland Baltimore County game when they beat Virginia as a 16-1 a couple years ago. I've been to Illinois, Mizzou. My whole family went to Illinois. That by far was the best atmosphere of a college basketball game that I've been to. It was just so special to see the momentum swaying back and forth. And I think it was just so special how it ended too, with that 11-0 run and the crowd clearly having such a factor on the closing parts of the game.
It was pretty darn cool, I gotta say. Yeah, interesting to hear that perspective. I'm a little bit biased towards UNCW, obviously, but you know, I've been courtside for Duke and Carolina and Cameron, and that was about as close as it's going to get to that. So It was really cool to see that. I didn't know if it could get better than last year, but man, did it. Bill, where were
obviously
you?
Obviously, the result helps. Saturday?
Yes, the win helps.
I was in the upper level, but man, yeah, great atmosphere. I thought it was interesting that Siddle said it was the best atmosphere he had ever been a part of. And from someone that got to school when Buzz Pearson was the coach, I didn't really see Trask at its best until him and Keats got there. So I kind of have to second what he said. It's the best atmosphere I've seen in Trask, and I've seen some good games there over the years, but I think that was the best, and just the outcome of it all, and you know, the storming of the court at the end was beautiful, and I know the haters hated it, but I loved it, and just to see the guys, you know, really thrive off the atmosphere. I think last year it kind of took them back a little bit, and they started off slow, but not this time. They were ready to play from the jump, and just an impressive performance by both teams, but we outlasted them, and really proud of the team for that W.
Yeah. Were you safe down there, Jake, in that wild and crazy court storming that was so dangerous, in which the security people moved and the dance team moved and got out of the way?
I am so pro when it's not necessary, but when it's, you know, warranted, storming the court, storming the field, whatever it is, these fans are, you know, they spend too much mentally and emotionally to not get to do that to me. And especially the student section, I think it's just such a fun thing to do. I understand. I'm sure you guys saw the clips of this week, like Caitlin Clark and the fan from Ohio State making contact. I don't know what the correct word for that is, but that's obviously the situation which UNCW is trying to avoid anything like that. I thought the administration did a good job. I don't want to say they allowed it to happen, but funneling the students away from the Charleston bench specifically, and like not jumping over the media tables and kicking in, you know, TV monitors. They did it the right way, and I'm really happy that they got to do it. I know it's kind of a dying art per se, getting to rush the court, rush the field, but they did it the right way, and clearly they enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think I've been pretty outspoken on my view of court storming, and that everyone should do it after every win because it's fun. I mean, at Clemson, they meet at the Paw after every win, or after every game, actually. So nobody sees a problem with that. So, and, you know, there's enough going on in the world that you should probably try to enjoy every little thing that you can. And kind of to the point that whole anti-court storming thing is they just don't see the athletes as people in a way, because those are their classmates. Those are people they live in the dorms with. And as I was watching them on the floor,
yes,
they're taking pictures with people. They're dapping up their friends. They're dancing.
That's
they're having
what
a
I
great
wanted
time.
To say. It was so evident that they enjoyed it too. We've seen Trey and Shy after big wins. They go straight to the student section. Just at least on my video, getting, you know, looking back at that 90-second recording, I see Shamar, Donovan, KJ, Trezarian, just, you know, guys they go to class with, like you said, guys, you know, that they walk by with and interact with, people that are supporting them and rooting for them. And when they achieve these awesome things like beating Charleston, they want to celebrate with the people who are supporting them. So I think that's a great point to you bring up that, you know, we talk about the safety of the student athletes in that situation, but I think deep down, if you ask them, they want the interaction. They want that to happen.
Yeah. They clearly loved it. I guess from, you know, elsewhere from the fan perspective, everything was perfect on that end. The game, about as perfect as it could have been for KJ Jenkins, who inserted into the starting lineup, and taking the place of Donovan Newby. Coach Sill said that he wanted to kind of get Donovan a different look at the game to help him get it on track shooting, but KJ Jenkins absolutely seized that opportunity.
Yeah, I think KJ is just the perfect complement to our engines, Trezarian and Shaikim. Not even just, you know, he's a sniper. We know he's one of the best shooters in the conference. I think he actually might be now by percentage. But just what he forces opposing defenses to do. We talked a little bit before the show just about one specific play in which they kind of ran a double screen for him. He came up on the wing. Just how a defense is going to have to prepare for him and what that does in terms of allowing other guys that, you know, put the ball on the floor and try and get to the rack a little bit more than he does. But I've always been a believer in that the biggest or the most important thing for a shooter is comfortability. It's not necessarily, you know, your shot speed or where you shoot it from. You have to be comfortable in those situations. And I think it's just so clear that, I mean, game by game, it just seems he's getting more and more comfortable with what Coach Siddle's asking him to do, how he's asking him to get open, and the players that he's kind of playing off of.
Yeah, his off-ball movement's been tremendous. It's hell for whoever's guarding him. And just to add that factor to, you know, a court that already has Trezarian White and Shaikim Phillips on it, it's just really hell for opposing defenses. Our offense has been thriving since he's kind of blossomed into this bigger role, and I'm super excited for what he's done the last couple of weeks, and I think he's just going to keep it going, you know, this weekend as we go up north.
It's no secret that UNCW last year, sorry, Brent, didn't have that kind of threat of a shooter. And especially in games like Saturday, I think it just gives them a new dimension in terms of what defenses have to do to mitigate that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I know you look at what Coach Siddle said on his radio show on Monday, and he said, the quote is, last year they were playing shell defense to where they wouldn't guard certain guys on the perimeter. And it turned into some bad shots and bad percentages for Shy and Trey. So having the floor space only helps our offense out. So we're clearly seeing the fruit of that now. Hopefully a couple other guys can get it going. Hopefully Donovan can get his shot straightened out. He was working extra before the game, stayed out on the court longer than everybody, knocked down one early, and then missed a couple, and then it just seemed like he wasn't playing as confidently as we have seen him play at times. So, really hoping that he gets going. But KJ, in the meanwhile, from non-conference schedule to now, he has changed. Where did my stats go? Oh, there. He was averaging 9 points a game in the non-conference and now 13 points a game in conference play. He shot 31.6% from three in non-conference, and he's shooting 47.2% in conference play, which puts him in the 96th percentile nationally. So he's gone from, oh, he's also improved his turnover rate, which was already great. He's dropped that from 6.2 to 1.7. He's 15.8 points per 40 minutes in the non-conference, and then 20 now. So across the board, everything is great. And I know Siddle mentioned that he wanted, part of the reason that he came to UNCW is that he didn't want to be known as a shooter. And I think we saw some of that too, because he made some plays off of his shot, which was excellent.
He's definitely echoed that. Go ahead, Bill. Sorry.
I think his defense has gotten better. You know, he's been a guy that opponents were attacking, you know, early in the season. I think he's gotten a little tougher on that end and made guys a little work a little bit harder against him. So not only has he made a jump offensively and helping on that end, I think he's holding his own defensively too, which is, you know, a big help as well.
I was just going to add, you know, you mentioned the turnovers and Saturday. I thought that was the other huge storyline, not just necessarily from KJ, but for a season low four turnovers against Charleston. Charleston is two of the top 10, I guess, stealers per game. So just the fact that they were able to really control it against those loose hands, even when you mentioned Donovan might not necessarily be able to feel comfortable with his shot. He was only one for six in the first half, but to have four turnovers the whole game, obviously he handles the ball a lot. I just thought that was just a big development in what UNCW is able to do.
Yeah, that's kind of the story of the season to this point, because you know last year when UNCW won those big games early in the year against North Texas and Vermont down in that tournament, it was because they weren't turning the ball over. They were really taking care of the ball. They were winning these grinders, and then things got away in the back when they got into the CAA and ended up at 221 nationally in turnover rate, which is crazy considering they were 39 in Siddle's first year with that roster that was just completely decimated. They were 12th nationally in the second year, the Jalen Sims year, and currently number one nationally in turnover rate, which is doesn't really matter what you're doing. You're going to have a chance to win a whole lot of games when you're not giving the other team runouts, and you're giving yourself every opportunity. So, yeah, that is just huge going forward.
I think on Charleston's end, man, Ante Bercevich was super special, right? Was just blown away by his performance. The 27-11, it kind of looked like he was, you know, getting everything he wanted. But on rewatch, I thought Kamari and Ahmad did pretty decent job guarding him, making him work. Obviously, Shai had the big steal on him, you know, kind of coming over and fooling him on that, you know, play near the end of the game. But man, what a special performance by him! Super excited about when they play Drexel and him and Amari Williams go up against each other, because that's just going to be two, you know, elite big men going at it. But outside of him, they didn't have too many players step up. I know Jordan Crawford had a surprisingly big game, but outside of that, it was really just them two. So all in all, a solid performance. I think good job by Kamari and Ahmad wearing him down defensively, and he was just not the same player at the end of the game.
Yeah, clearly Berzovic was his strongest right in the beginning of the second half. He seemed to have bucket after bucket. Coach Siddle mentioned it this week too. He didn't want to go as far as say like he wore them down. Kamari Amart wore him down, but I think it was clear the fatigue was a factor for him at some point. Or maybe you want to the moment. It's obviously huge, and he's performed well in huge moments. But he did have that turnover with 1:19 left when he was. Driving left, spun back right. Shakim is literally standing right there, reads it the entire time and feels it. But yeah, he's you mentioned Amari Williams too. To me, like they're just some of the most skilled regardless of how big they are, just skilled big men. It's so unique to see guys like that. And it poses such a huge problem to defenses to have a guy like that who can, put the ball in the bounce, finish left or right, post up guy up, or, even as a screen and roller, he was really good. Just the range of his game is truly, truly impressive.
I want to know how the hell that guy ended up at Southeastern Oklahoma. That is insane. Can you imagine that dude playing in what? I think it's D2. Might be in AIA, but I mean that is wild. That's a guy that I mean he's obviously not as good as Nikola Jokic, but a lot of the same skills as a guy that can handle it at his size. They kept hitting him on the short roll, which was kind of the interesting. Whereas you think that a big man, when you want to hit him as a roller, you're going to wait till he gets all of the way to the basket. But they didn't have to do that. They'd get him the ball about the free throw line, and he could take his man off the dribble at that size, which is crazy. So, yeah, I think
Another
we just.
big point I loved about his game too, and I think you tweeted about this, his competitiveness. Like he's so clearly not, I think, Eurobigs sometimes get the soft persona. People just assume that, they don't come from a hard upbringing and things like that, and maybe don't do their history and see that, people, some of these people come from like war-torn countries and have seen some pretty tough things in their life and grow up pretty tough. Not just on the court, but as people as well. And you could just see that Saturday how competitive he is, because he was really getting into it with the fans. And he's, there's two ways of doing it. There's what I derogatorily call the mental midget way of doing it, when you really let it like affect your performance negatively. And then there's another way to do it, that can really kind of, build you up and feed you. I guess, I'm not going to compare him to like Michael Jordan, but like having that kind of feeling where you can feed off energy that isn't necessarily a tangible effect on the game and make it that. I think he definitely has that kind of ability and that kind of mentality to chirp back, but do it in a positive and productive way. And he channels that energy pretty well. He did Saturday.
Yeah, he was clearly thriving off the atmosphere, and he's a player that's got all the tools to make a lot of money, whether it's in America or playing in Europe. And I would not be surprised if we see him representing the Croatian national team in a couple of years.
Yeah, he's going to be playing on the Olympic stage when next time he gets that chance. So, I guess that is one of the other takeaways from that game. What we saw from, as you said, Kamari on the rewatch was not bad. And Siddle said on in his radio show that there was a moment Saturday night after the game, after the celebration, that Kamari was sitting in his locker room looking really disappointed. He asked him why, and he said that, he was just taking it really personally that he let Brzovic go for 27 on him. And it's like, man, I don't know who he wouldn't have gotten 27 against on Saturday, but I thought Kamari did a decent job. We were, occasionally put in a disadvantage because of the way that we were playing the screen and the pick and roll early, and then got off of. After they knocked down a couple on going under, we got a little bit kind of antsy on how we were covering that, and that opened up space for him. So, I thought Kamari was fine, and he continues to be awesome defensively. And then we saw him get a late bucket on a roll in which was wide open a lot of the night and is going to continue to be, I think. So we're going to see him continue to get those easy buckets if his teammates can hit him on the roll. And the other thing that we saw at that position was Amard Harvey just playing his ass off, a week back into to being able to play. He comes out and gets six huge rebounds, and one of them was an offensive board that he immediately flipped to a Nolan Hodge for a three. And you can really see what the coaches saw in him and why they wanted to add him to this team.
One thing I've noticed about his game is he sets really good screens, and that's an underrated part, especially in an offense that's thriving on, getting switches on the mismatches like we tend to do sometimes. And he might not put up the biggest numbers offensively, but he contributes in that sense offensively. And obviously is a great rebounder, and he's shown that he can make good passes. So I've been super excited what I've seen from Ahmad. He seems to get a little bit better every game, the more comfortable he gets. And that McGriff Harvey's a really nice punch, both sides of the floor to have. And Shout out to Nick Farrar, who, has been playing a lot, but had a key putback at the end of that first half to get it down to 5 points. And if that doesn't go in, Charleston's probably running down and maybe pushing the lead to nine. Instead, we score there and they call a timeout. We get a chance to set our defense and we have a really good possession defensively to end that half. And I thought that just put us in a much better place mentally, being down five after a big putback and stop than it would be if it was a miss and they run out and score. I know 9-5 doesn't seem like a big difference, but in that moment, it felt big.
Yeah, momentum is probably the most important thing in a game like that. And shout out to Nick. He's just a bona fide hooper. I know he's one of those guys. One of my favorite sayings is, those guys, you don't have to get ready if you stay ready. He's always somebody who's going to stay ready whenever his number is called. Back to Amard really quick. One of the other things, obviously it's still just limited minutes coming off the injury, but the way he shoots the ball in warmups, I think he actually has the potential to space the ball or at least space the floor out necessarily if we can get him like in pick and pop looks or if he, is working on the weak side. Especially if he's going to be, probably the best defensive rebounder on the team when he's fully healthy. I think that could be a huge addition offensively. Not even necessarily if he's taking huge volumes, but just, like we were mentioning earlier, spacing, opening up the floor for, the engines 13 and 2. And other guys who are going to put the ball in the bounce to try and get to the rim. I think if UNCW is going to reach that like peak level, he's going to have to, maybe, he played 15 minutes Saturday. If he can bump that up a little bit and space the floor as well, I think that would be a big reason to keep him on the floor.
Yeah, we saw that become a major asset later in Devontae Kaycock's career. Not that we're saying he's Devontae Kaycock or anything, but when Devontae was able to step out to the free throw line and knock down that jumper, that just added another dimension of total unguardability to his game. So if he can do something like that, that's going to be huge for us and continuing to open the paint. But I thought, seeing what we've seen from him so far, and then from the radio show one day, what Siddle was talking about added some kind of interesting context to the season so far, going 9-3 in the non-conference. And Siddle said, we have to get him ready to play a major role in what we're doing. Going into the season, we felt like he would be our starter at that position, and then he got injured. So, considering, you're without your starting five man, which was probably the biggest question for this team from the middle of March last year when that final buzzer sounded, things are going pretty all right to have gotten about what, 30 minutes from your starting center. Not bad.
Yeah, he's been tremendous. And he just for him to be able to fit in this team, I've not playing for half the season. It's been super special and clearly a guy that's played a lot of basketball and he's just really fundamentally sound and tends to always make the right play. So I'm excited to see what he's got, and especially if he can grow his game a little bit more into scoring.
And Bill, you already mentioned it. The game seemed to just be blending together for me, but the one pass that he had, he caught the ball kind of on the short roll and just immediately knew Nolan was coming behind him on that backdoor cut. Seems to be a pretty cerebral player, and I think that's a really important aspect. We're talking about like scoring offensive production too. If you can throw a guy a ball in a 4-on-3 situation and he's going to make the right a la like Draymond Green or Pascal Siakam type look, that is, just as impactful.
Yeah, I think that was his first touch on the offensive end as a Seahawk. So that's pretty good usage percentage to be able to get an assist like that. Well, trying to think of all the different things from the Charleston game we've talked about. Oh, we haven't talked about Shaquem Phillips, the guy who played awesome, iced the game. It's funny that that's kind of like the fourth level storyline that we're thinking about, but just incredible in every way. It's hard to say any more than we've already said about him, but we're going to do it anyway. And to see him come full circle, it's so awesome. After last year, when he got his shot blocked by Jalen Scott, when he was trying to play on one leg, and then to come back this year and play such a huge role in that game and to put it away on his shot from the elbow, it was just a really one of those cool moments about sports that you think about and like, man, where else do you get this? Where else do you get to see someone get that kind of redemption? Not that he needed redemption for anything, but a lot of people said a lot of stupid shit on the internet last year after he missed that, or after he got that shot block. So very enjoyable.
He was so
I'm glad you
poised.
said that. Go ahead, Bill. Sorry.
He
I'm
was
glad you
so
said that, though.
poised in that moment, right? Like he gets the steal, which he completely baited Bercevic in, and he turns it around, and he just knows it's his time, and everyone in the arena knows it's his time, but there was no one that could stop him, right? And he hit that pull up, and it was so cool to just look around the top of Trask, and everyone's just hitting their wrists and shot time. It's just been a special year for him so far, and it's a special moment. But he was really great in that second half. You really see him and Trey's leadership shine through in a game like that. And the moment was never too big for them Saturday. And a lot of guys wouldn't have been as poised to pull that ball out after steal. They might have rushed it down and tried to get a quick basket, but he knew what the moment was, and he stepped up, and as he's done all season, he pulled through.
I've covered some pretty special athletes. I think mentally he is as elite as any of them. He is a bad 12-letter cuss word at the end of the day. He's somebody that's going to operate at this level during practice, in meaningless games, in meaningful games, and in the biggest moments. He's going to operate at the exact same level. And I thought from 119 left of the game to 50 whatever when he hit the basket was just a perfect personification, quintessential moment of that to get the steal, pull the ball back, realize we don't need to rush this. Nobody else touches the ball. He gets the switch and then just goes to work. He might not be everybody, at least, basketball nerds, I'll say these days, love spacing and shooting. And I get that that's important and that might not be his strength, but he does so many things so well. So many things elite that I think he's got a chance to continue playing basketball beyond this year for a while. He's
Yeah,
a
absolutely.
special dude. He's just a special dude.
He's going to make a lot of money playing basketball, whether it's here in Europe, elsewhere. Bright future in front of him. And yeah, he's single-handedly wrecking our shot quality numbers, I think, because all of the analytics view a mid-range jumper as not a great shot. But I mean, there's no better shot for UNCW this season. So
Exactly.
totally wrecking the numbers, which is great.
I asked him privately, off camera if that was the biggest shot he's hit. He couldn't think of one, but he's just so humble in that moment that, he's always one of the guys first to deflect any kind of praise or credit to, the guys on the court with him, the guys who are coaching him, his family, people who brought him up. He's just the guy. He's just the kind of guy you want to rely on. When you're like, we need a basket, we need a stop.
Yeah, and I think it really shows. He was he must have been pretty damn injured last year. I know he had the ankle issue, he had a wrist issue. I think he got sick for a while, and it just, it never really got on track for him in the way that he had played offensively the year before that. He was awesome defensively still. He just couldn't get his offense going. So, just awesome to see. And I think that it might be a little early to say this, but I think the jersey belongs in the. Oh, it's not early to say that. The jersey belongs in the rafters for a lot of reasons. I don't know if everybody is willing to commit to that plan yet, but I think for everything that he has done on the court, for him sticking around with the program at a time that he could have left multiple times, he could have left after the coaching change, he could have left after being awesome his sophomore year. But he's just kind of stuck around and really embodied what we want UNCW basketball to be all about. So I think the jersey goes in the rafters.
I agree. I loved his answer after about, was this payback or redemption? And he was just like, nah, man, it's basketball. You're gonna lose some games, but you have to stick to the process, was kind of his answer. And he's in, he's done that, and he could have been a guy that pressed a lot in this Charleston game, wanting that win so bad, but he was in rhythm the whole time. And I think they did a pretty good job guarding him in the first half, but in the second half he was unstoppable. And Trey's the same way. Those guys were, look determined to win that game, but they were never going to be pressed to, go out of their comfort zone to win it.
Yeah, I'll leave it to you guys. A little bit more experience with UNCW basketball and say whether or not a jersey belongs in the Raptors or not. But I think you guys both alluded to it. He has been the miss. If there's a Mr. Seahawk, it has been Shai Keem. Not even just because he stayed, but because he's been so supportive of the university. I've spoken to him, and he's like, "This is where I grew up wanting to play." He grew up in the Winterville area. I believe he went to Winterville High School. I don't know that for sure, but he's from the greater southeastern North Carolina area. And the fact that he picked the Teal instead of some of the other schools, maybe in the other direction, I thought it was always really cool. And it's genuine. It's genuine.
Yeah, I'm very happy that ECU let him get out of Greenville somehow. That was probably bad on their part, but sure glad we got him. And yeah, that's another reason is that he is a North Carolina guy, and this is a program that has recruited locally more often than not. And I think he's just the guy that you want as one of the faces of your program.
If I can quickly lobby for a potential, I don't want to call him the next Shai Keem Phillips, but locally you mentioned, and I have to, because they was mentioned during the radio show, I believe yesterday. Coach talking about recruiting, and they're just the lack of availability for high school kids. I totally get it, but I think we have the guy who could be the next Shai Keem Phillips here locally. If you guys ever get a chance to go to a New Hanover High School basketball game, this kid Rod Meek Allen is next up. He's not very tall, but he plays a lot like Shai Keem, not even just X's and O's basketball wise, but the proverbial dog inside of him. I've never seen a more intense high school basketball player, a kid who takes things personally as he does. In a June showcase, they're up by 40. He's pressing full court for the entire game. And I just think they have so many of the similar qualities. I'm trying to get some of the UNCW assistant coaches to take a look at him. So that's just my lobbying of local basketball using my platform as the local basketball reporter to try and lobby for one of our local kids.
Well, I think we've touched on enough from the Charleston game. Turns out the season continues.
Yeah, really.
And the Seahawks head to the Northeast. It's like it feels like it was just yesterday. I mean, we've all been thinking about this game for several days, which kind of probably explains how tough it is as a college athlete for it to move on to the next thing. But UNCW heads up to Boston to meet Northeastern on Thursday night. And then they make the short trip on down to Long Island on Saturday to play Stony Brook in a CBS Sportsnet game. Hopefully we get another Johnny Fanta appearance for that one. Although we're cool with Dave Ryan too. He's plenty fine, but nobody loves the Seahawks more than John Fanta at the national level. But Bill, I know you've watched a good bit of Northeastern. What are your thoughts going into this one?
They have some big guards. I imagine this is a team that, we've said it a lot this year. They're going to be physical with us. They're going to try to take us out of our rhythm. Their biggest home court advantage is that like nobody goes to their games. There probably won't be 200 people in that hockey arena they play at, and so we're going to have to generate some of our own energy. Obviously, Bill Cohen is a legend in the conference. He's officially the all-time wins leader. But they have some solid players. Chris Doherty is, basically a double-double machine at the five for them. He's not very tall, but he's a strong guy. And then Harold Woods and Masai Troutman have made some, pretty big steps in conference play. They both had big games Saturday at Elon. Harold Woods had 20 points and 6 rebounds, and Troutman had 17, and they also beat Elon by 12 points at Elon. So I think this is going to be a tough game. Those games up there usually are, but I have faith in these guys that I think they stopped thinking about Charleston way before we did. I'm sure they turned the page and got back to it on Monday, and so I think they'll be ready. But I know Bill Cohen will have something up his sleeves for us.
I know one of the guys that I have seen his name in the box score occasionally is Luka Sakota. He has played pretty well since the start of CAA. He's a 6'6", kind of a wing guy. He's precisely the guy that Malik Harden-Hayes would be guarding in this game. So, yeah, it's just a tough place to play. I know there have always been some times where we've gone up there and played just a very strange game because it's a very weird place to play. It's a cold old hockey arena with nobody there. And then after playing in these environments at home, and then you got to go do that. So that is always part of the challenge. I know one of the cool things that came out of the Monday show is that Siddle mentioned that this could be Nick Ferrar's time to shine.
Yeah, I think he did mention, it seems like Northeastern and Stony Brook maybe don't have the guys that are the quickest of foot at the fours and five spots and can actually guard a guy like Nick and really let, because when Nick's at his best, he's cooking. He's not, we're mentioning guys like, Kamari Amard, they're more, like screen and roll guys and can get their spots that way. Nick's somebody you can give the ball and can create his own offense. And if somebody's going to, and if they're not going to guard him with, the most fleet of foot guys, that's really something he could take advantage of. One of the things Northeastern is good at, they're not great at a lot of things, but they are a pretty decent rebounding team. That obviously is something Saturday. I don't want to say it hurt the Seahawks, but it definitely had potential to hurt the Seahawks. I think there was one possession pretty late in the game. I think Charleston had like three offensive
My
rebounds in
God,
that. Yeah,
they just
that
kept
was
bouncing.
I don't know how many times my heart beat during that possession, but I was definitely over my average heartbeat rate. So that's at least one storyline I'm looking at for this upcoming game on Thursday. Can UNCW box out and grab rebounds at a high enough pace not to let Northeastern kind of muck up the game enough to keep themselves in it?
Yeah, they're a team that hits the boards really hard. Especially offensive, they rebound it pretty well defensively, but they make a priority of getting to the boards with Doherty, who's a big, strong dude, 6'7", 235. So not the most, not the tallest guy, but a just your classic physical kind of undersized big man. And an old Seahawk friend, Joe Pritchen, still around, and we know how he plays. He's a lot like in the Trezerian White mold, where he's an undersized kind of stronger guy that can play the four slot. So yeah, they do have the ability to get on the boards, and that is one thing that could give us some trouble in this game.
Yeah, and in Stony Brook, I look at Kenan Fitzmaurice. He's a 7-footer that plays, a bunch of minutes for him. I don't know if we've played a guy with quite his height, but I think that is absolutely a matchup where they're probably going to try to roll Nick or maybe Eric out there to kind of stretch the floor. I'm the only, they got to find a way to get him off the floor and make him guard the perimeter, unless they're going to maybe try to mix in some zone. But the way KJ's been shooting, I just don't know if he can play zone against us at this point. So it'll be interesting to see how we navigate these teams. They're gonna play tough, and there's obviously some good, top level CAA players with Doherty and at Northeastern, and Tyler Stevenson Moore, when he gets going, can score with the best of them in the conference. So definitely two teams you can't take lightly.
Yeah, that's my only note for the Stony Brook is just contain Tyler Stevenson Moore. He's a 6'3" guard. He likes to get downhill. When they're playing well, he's kind of the engine for that. So, if that's at least the only note I had for the Stony Brook game. Again, I don't want to say like these are, cakewalk games, especially given off coming off the high of Saturday. These are definitely not games that you want to just, gloss over. Especially given
Yes.
how the away games started, at least for conference for us. But definitely games
Yeah.
if the Seahawks take care of what they can take care of, those are games that should be within their control.
Yeah, these are two teams that are kind of in that establishing middle of the league that has kind of popped up. I know we've got a little bit of separation at the top now, where it looks like UNCW, Drexel, Towson, Charleston, Hofstra, maybe Delaware in that group. A&T is currently in that group at 4-2, but I
Yeah.
don't believe they're going to hang around for much longer. They've had a pretty easy schedule. They do have one of the best scorers in the country in Landon Glasper, but they're going to have to start playing a little more defense when they see the top of the league. So definitely not a cakewalk. These teams are capable of wins at home. Stony Brook had Hofstra on the ropes pretty good the other night before another ridiculous Hofstra comeback, which our good friend Jerry Beach is not enjoying much of, but they just keep doing it. So.
Yeah, I watched some of that game on Monday, and Tyler Stevenson Moore didn't even really play that well to his standards, and they had a really good chance of winning it. It kind of just fell off towards the end. A guy named Andre Snoddy really played well for them. And I think he's a guy we got to definitely pay attention for on Saturday. He had 17 and 11 against Hofstra, and he also had 13 and 9 against Delaware. So a big week for him last week. I think that's a guy that's probably going to build off that and kind of a wing. And so someone that can play off of Stevenson more. And they've also got Dean Noel, who had a big game against Hofstra with, I think he had 19. He's had 15 plus in three of his last four. So they've got some guys that can score the ball. We definitely, can't come out and think we're going to cruise through either of these games. These are two talented, well-coached teams. Geno Ford does a good job at Stony Brook. He's, trying to get them kind of at the CAA level. And so this would be a big win for them.
And yes,
One of the other
they're
things I'll pay attention to is the wing
sorry.
play without Malik. Hopefully, the young guys, Nolan and Noah, really want to see how they perform on this weekend trip. And what I imagine would be extended minutes for both of them as Malik continues to rehab from his leg injury.
Yeah, that's one thing that we forgot to talk about from the Charleston game was Nolan Hodge playing 27 incredible defensive minutes. Knocked down a couple of shots too, but really made a difference in that game with his length on the perimeter and just effort diving for a steal that pretty well shut the door for UNCW. So really excited to watch him continue. I know Noah had some big rebounds, continues to just be Noah. He knocked down a nice three earlier in that game, had a couple more shots. He had a couple more looks that he could have knocked down. Hopefully those will start falling for him. But as you look at Stony Brook, yes, their accountant player that is due to hit some threes is Jared Frey, depending on how you pronounce it. He's shooting 39% from three and looks like an accountant. So you can bet he's going to knock down a couple on Saturday.
Yeah, go over his screens.
Yeah, to touch on the Noah and Nolan part, I thought they were really good, once we got back home and played these games at home, and obviously we had a trip in Elon, but not too far away from the home nest. So I really thought they played some of their best ball of the season these last four games. And it'll be interesting to see if it travels. I imagine it will, but it's a little different when you go on the road. So that's a good point to kind of focus so they can build on their success and their bigger role since Malik is injured.
Yeah, Coach Siddle called them the brothers after that game, so they're pretty much like brothers. So, I suspect that them playing well at the same time is related. They're just building off each other. So, I guess that covers it for last week's game and this week's games and the Charleston win. So, as usual, we have some questions from our loyal Perchverts. I don't know if that's the name we want to stick with. We're still workshopping it a little bit, but our good friend Joshua Warner asked Jake, this is the first time that anybody has been especially interested in the guest story and not just basketball. So Josh wants to know the story of how you got to where you're at and any
Sure.
interesting notes on behind the scenes looks and how much do you film in a game and how do you kind of go through your question process?
Sure, I'll start with where I got here. I am from the beach where the sun sets and not sunrises. I am from Los Angeles, California. Grew up a pretty big jock. Played a lot of different sports. Football and basketball, big passions. Was going to walk on at SMU football. This is back before we were good. 2014 was my first year as June Jones. We won one game that year. Shout out Michael Oblinger. We beat UConn in the last game of the season. Realized that that wasn't really going to be a life path. So tried to find something else that I was like passionate about, like I was playing. Got into like the media side of it. Started to do like in-depth interviews with the athletic department and football players specifically, like X's and O's type things. And some people who were in journalism classes were like, hey, you should try broadcasting, try classes like that. So, one door kind of opened another one. My first job was out in Texas where I used to, I did news and sports. I'm sure you guys have heard of Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah.
I covered the Permian Panthers, the Midland League Rebels. My first job was in Midland, Odessa. that was pretty cool to see, as somebody who, loves Texas football and the aura around that. But I also did news out there, got the full-time sports gig here. So that's how, in June of 21. So I've been here ever since. In terms of like access or questions about like, one of the things that I love about the job is relationships. Shout out Nicole Woods. One of her favorite lines, and I've sold it a couple times. I've told her, she says, relationships are her superpower. And I think that's just such an important job of, or such an important part of this job is relationships with, the athletes, relationships with the coaches, so on and so forth. That's something that I really cherish. And, being able to, maybe not call them friends per se, but more than just a working relationship with guys like Trezarian, guys like Shai King. Like I love seeing them. Like Trezarian just had a kid. Like I like talking to him about like his family and how he's feel, how he's dealing with stuff like that. And that to me is how the job is done. I definitely have seen people who don't get as invested in it, and I just think it's just so hard to do the job that way. And then like filming a game, I do my best to film the entire game because you never know when there's a viral moment you could get. There's definitely like a thought process of like shooting for highlights and like making sure I have enough highlights. And there's definitely times where like for broadcast news, the deadlines are very by the minute. So if they need something, sometimes I got to leave in the third quarter and make sure they got video for the 10 p.m. newscast. So whenever I'm not filming, I'm usually doing something, if it's editing or filming a, a stand-up. But I do my best to film like pretty much the entire game just in case there's, a memorable moment or, something that could potentially go viral. Even just something I could post on Twitter after, or something that I noticed. I was like, that was really cool. That didn't make my highlight.
Well, your shot of Siddle celebration was definitely a popular one the other day. Were you? What was the process on that? Did you just kind of instantly look over there and anticipate that something was coming?
Yeah, I think you actually mentioned that play earlier. I think that was when Nolan had dove for a ball, and it was kind of a 50-50 ball, and it was the Seahawks basketball with, this is like a minute left in the game, and I'm very into zoom ins and zoom outs. It's just kind of like motion shots, and when I was zooming out, I could see through the viewfinder to KO kind of turn around and throw the fist pump, and I just, kind of naturally I was like, boom, I got to go in on that, and then I was just at a really great angle where I kind of crept out of that shot, all you could see was the sea of teal behind it. So it was just, that's kind of the probably one of the most important things of shooting. Like I said, I'd love to move around. The angle of it is always probably the most important thing that I'm looking at. And I was just lucky to be at that spot for that shot.
Is that something that you can learn, or is it just kind of instinctive that you begin to anticipate where and when to kind of get your shot?
So we all, there's a joke of like sideline shooters that like just try not to get butt cheeks in your shot, because the referees are always moving on the sidelines, and 90% of baseline shooters are going to have one or two great highlights completely washed away because there's butt cheeks in your shot. So that, like I said, that's it's not something you can control, because the higher up you go, up to, do Carolina games, if you're covering games like that, you aren't allowed to move around like I am. But I do try and take advantage of it when I can, getting in front of the Seahawks club, being by the UNCW bench, and then during a timeout, I'll go quickly run to the other side, make sure I get different kinds of angles so we don't have like what's called jump cuts, where it looks like you're just shooting from the exact same spot. And I just personally think that looks lazy if you're in the exact same spot the whole time. I like to be up and moving,
Excellent. Next question comes from our good friend Fletch. He wasn't sure, but February is possibly sweeps month. What does that mean? We hear that term all the time, but what is sweeps?
Yeah. I'm not, I used to work in news. I should know. Sweeps is, there's certain months that are sweep pieces, and those are basically your like ratings gathering months. And you want your longer form pieces that are going to keep people's attention. 'Cause ratings go basically by, it's not like minute by minute, but I think it's like per 5 minutes. So like if you can keep somebody on your 11 o'clock newscast from 11 01 to 1105. Like, that's pretty valuable during sweeps month. So they try and, you know, enterprise these much longer form, deeper stories that aren't necessarily, I'm sure, you know, being in the business, called like a day turn story, like something you need to pump out right now. It needs to be ready to go tonight. Something that's a little more, you know, in depth, has a little bit like deeper level of thinking, maybe, you know, something you really can't just turn in a day if you really need to chase down public officials or whoever it is, somebody that maybe doesn't have, you know, as easy access. So that's what sweeps is really revolving around, is like these deeper, stronger, not necessarily featurey, but like longer form news stories. We don't really do those for sports. I know in much bigger markets with much bigger sports teams, that's definitely at the forefront of their minds. But I'm kind of the mindset of like, when I get a good feature story, especially because I'm a one-man department, I don't really have a lot of like tools and resources, human resources, to go out and like kind of help me with day-to-day sports content. So it's kind of harder for me to really enterprise those longer form stories. But that's, whenever I get them, I do my best to pump them out. I think it's one of the things I love to do most, is like human interest feature stories. I've gotten a couple from UNCW, a couple from local sports, like one of the other ones I just did recently was, there's like a New Hanover Seniors Basketball League. Like, it's the first one of its kind.
I watched that. That was awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was so much fun to do, like, you know, talking to them about like how much basketball means, like questions that like, I don't want to say don't matter, but it's not controversial. It's fun. It's, you know, something everybody's probably going to enjoy. Those are something I think are my stronger suits as well. I love doing featurey longer form stories.
Well, Fletch was also wondering, and I guess going towards sweeps months, do you have anything interesting planned on UNCW coaches, athletes in that longer form kind of area?
We'll see. I'll quickly throw the athletics department under the bus really quick. Shout out Tom Reardon, big fan of his. We were trying to do a story on Trezarian when right around the Kentucky game, I reached out because, you know, Trezarian was coming off the bench and he's one of the leading scorers in the country. And that's just what the lineup was at the time. So, you know, I didn't know if it was something that was gonna be permanent, but it was just, you know, a story I wanted to do, you know, fifth man, sixth man, seventh man, whatever it is. Trezarian's been the man for the Seahawks this year. And I think they had just gone on the road trip. Then they were going to go up to Marshall, and then it was like, holiday break, New Year break. And, you know, kind of kept postponing it. And then I asked right when they came back from break, I was like, hey, like, can we do it now? And coach, and he goes, you know, it's a program decision. We're not going to do the story anymore. I'm like, what? Like, did I do something wrong? Like, was it my reporting? Like, am I being cut off from the team? Like, did I say something to someone? And they're like, it's a program decision. And from then on, actually, after that game, Trezarian's been in the starting lineup ever since. So I don't want to say pressure from, you know, a local media station maybe put Trezarian in the starting lineup to figure out. No, that was one story, at least, that I was trying to do. Obviously, it doesn't look like that's going to be a story anymore. I think Trezarian will most likely remain in the starting lineup. I don't want to speak for Coach Siddle. He's still moving some pieces around. We did mention how KJ was just put in the starting lineup. But that was one, at least, that I was trying to feature, just because I think, fairly or unfairly, you could question, you know, Trezarian's maturity a little bit in his earlier years. And for somebody so good and having played so well to come off the bench, it's clearly a mature thing to digest and accept. So that was one of them. Doesn't look like that's going to be a story anymore, but we'll see as the month goes along. You know, I think there's many interesting storylines within this team, specifically the players.
This might be above our pay grades, but sure. Talking about conference realignment, TV markets, those sorts of things. Wilmington and Jacksonville are separate TV markets. How is that determined? How could Jacksonville be combined with the Wilmington market and thus make this a more attractive area for a conference looking to expand?
That's a good question. I don't really know what goes into breaking them up. That's, like you said, it's definitely above our pay grade of who decides what areas in what market. Like, for example, I know Myrtle Beach technically used to be in what's called this DMA. That's basically the market size. And, So it changes all the time. Technically, our market right now is New Hanover County, Brunswick County, Bladen County, Columbus County, and Pender County. And like you said, that cuts off right at Jacksonville. Like where I used to work in West Texas, for example, the Wilmington market, I think, is somewhere around like the number 110. Where I used to work in West Texas, geographically, is a much bigger area in Midland. Like you could drive 2.5 hours in either direction and still be in the DMA. So it is interesting how they cut them off. I don't have that answer. But to kind of answer your question, yes, it would theoretically make it a more attractive market if we did have the Jacksonville area in our DMA, because it would increase our number, therefore increase the amount of, you know, the TVs that they include. It would increase eyes on television. It would increase, you know, all of those numbers would basically be inflated. But to your point, I don't know how they choose to cut it off at that point.
Well, we know what we got to do now. We've got to somehow conspire to get Wilmington put into the Raleigh TV market and really blow this thing up and go to the Big 12 or something.
It's kind of a, like, there's always, like, I love the high school football here. And some of the teams that are very, very good are like right on that fringe you're talking about between Jacksonville and between, I guess, the Wilmington market. Like specifically Wallace Rose Hill is one high school in North Carolina that's so, so good. They're one of the best 2A teams every single year. Kevin Motzinger used to coach at New Hanover, my high school. He's the man. He's just got like a contagious personality. I love, like, anytime I get to be around the team, he's such a good coach and a dude that I root for. But to your point, they don't really get a lot of coverage because they're right on that fringe line. Like, some of their fans like get our TV reception, some of their fans get WCTI, WNCT, and then we kind of have like an argument back and forth sometimes of which one of our affiliates should go cover them, because technically they're in their market. But if you open Google Maps and open from my station to Wallace Rose Hill from their station to Wallace Rose Hill, it would take us less time. So sometimes I throw them a bone and I'll send a photographer out there also because I love having them in the show. But it is just kind of one interesting wrinkle of local television markets and, you know, kind of the not consistencies of where those lines are.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I find it strange that people are still worried about TV markets at a time that everyone is going to streaming. Like, is that really that big of a deal in conference realignment? I think it would be a bigger deal to get your games on a Paramount Plus or whatever, ESPN Plus. You're going to get more viewers, especially if you're, I mean, mid-major college basketball is not blowing up massive numbers on ESPN. So you're more likely to get streaming views.
Look at my conference. Rest in peace to the Pac-12. You know, they were hedging their bets. You know, we have San Francisco, we have Los Angeles, we have these giant TV markets that everybody's going to want to buy our rights. And that just really wasn't the case. You know, I guess, you know, they were thinking that, like, you know, people in Oakland aren't tuning in to college sports to the clip that the Pac-12 thought they would be. And that, you know, kind of it cost them a TV deal and cost them the teams that I grew up loving. But you're right. It's such an interesting time for college sports, college media rights, given the push to streaming. Because I know so many fans, UNCW fans specifically, have such a gripe with how you can access Seahawk basketball and how you cannot access Seahawk basketball. I did think it was really cool, even though it was the other station in town, to secure the rights to broadcast the Seahawks games. Because, I mean, that's the hottest ticket in town. And I think getting linear television rights for those games is such a big win for the school in keeping eyes on the team. I love pushing people to the stadium. But, I mean, most of these games are going to sell out anyway, and people aren't going to pay, was it like $30 a month to subscribe to watch the games via the streaming service? So the fact that they're trying to get it, you know, on linear television. And I know the TV deal that they have now is only through the end of the season. So I am sending it up the chain of command to try and make sure we can capitalize on said opportunity, because I think that would be really cool for us to be able to, sell that.
Yeah, I think it would be awesome for the station that has UNCW basketball games on to cover UNCW basketball games on their news programs. Seems like that would be an opportunity for you guys to get in there and do more. So hopefully that is the case. We have no gripe with the other station, but just unfortunate that there are not more local media there covering it. But everybody's bored of hearing me talk about that. So
Technically, I have no gripe with them either. They don't even have a full-time sports guy. I mean, this is such a great sports market. Not even just, the university. We have a couple pretty good community colleges that have made some noise on national levels in basketball and some other sports. The high school football in the area is very strong and it's very well consumed. The high school basketball in the area is very strong, very well consumed. I just think it's crazy that they're owned by a national broadcasting company who will remain unnamed, but the fact that they would pivot away from sports completely to me is just such a it obviously I'm biased, but to me that's I just can't believe they wouldn't invest in that.
Yeah, it's interesting that their business model in newspaper journalism as well as to we're running out of money. Let's stop covering local stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like the things that people actually who subscribe, what they actually want to see. Instead, I feel like so much of like clickbait now is, you're trying to like generate a new audience and you get that one click on that one story, but then you turn off two people who've been clicking on everything you've ever done because they're like, I don't want to look at that. And then all of a sudden you realize you've lost everybody who you used to have subscribed to you because you've made this pivot to things that they don't actually want.
Yeah, exactly. It's not sustainable in the long run. So, but you're doing a great job of covering UNCW, and hopefully we can step things up as the season goes along. I know we've gotten a good response to doing these podcasts. Everybody's reading the written content, so we're going to be trying to put more stuff out there as things pick up. And then we got baseball season coming here in a few weeks, which is gonna be fun. Saw somebody pick UNCW for the College World Series the other day. Someone totally unaffiliated with UNCW, which was wild. I think that would be a religious experience of some sort. So, I guess I will we'll leave it there. What are you most looking forward to over these next couple months, Jake?
I think the basketball team is just such my bread and butter. I love being around it, the atmosphere and the energy. It's such a contagious energy around the team. I mean, it almost doesn't even feel like work when I go first Saturday game. That to me has to be where at least my mental energy is focused on is can we get over that hump 2 years in a row coming up. People can say not one possession, but the last year's game was a one possession game before they got free. So I know it's a 5-point game, but to be this close 2 years in a row, if we can get over the hump this year, and then obviously, I mean, I should say obviously, knock on wood, we'll send me to wherever they will be playing to me. That's what I have to be, like we were talking about earlier, selfishly invested in.
Yeah, exactly. When you're a sports reporter, you're covering a team, you want that team to be good because you get to go cool places, you get to tell good stories, and people are interested in your work. So, good stuff. Bill, what about you? Next couple of weeks, what's on the horizon for you?
Just Seahawk basketball. I'm looking forward to Campbell coming to town next weekend and getting to see Anthony Del Orso and kind of moving that rivalry into a new era with them being in conference. And February in the CAA is the best, and we have plenty of home games finally. And that's just what I'm looking forward to, being in Trask.
Absolutely. It was my Saturday was my first time down there this season, and I think I'll come back a little bit sooner because it was a pretty good time.